All right, so we're back. Self-Made Mommies podcast, and just as promised, we're talking about the home buying process this time.
Very exciting.
So exciting, and there's so many topics to cover, so many steps to cover. I want to make sure that everybody walks away with a clearer understanding of what the process requires, what it entails, and of course, our personal experiences with mm-hmm. it.
And we hope that you leave the episode feeling excited about it. If you have not embarked down that path yet, you know, taking the first steps to do so. To me, that would be like a measure of success for me personally, for somebody to hear the episode and be like, you know what? Because of you guys.
I went and got pre-approved.
Right.
So without further ado, we're going to hop into the actual process. So all too often, I think that there is a positive to technology like Zillow app, you know, realtor app, because you can just go online, you can shop for a house, mm-hmm. but there is a process that needs to be followed. If you're really trying to make something happen and you're really trying to become really an investor, because mm-hmm. even with, like you always say, Lacey,
your first home makes you a real estate investor. And some people like put that on their vision board as this aspirational thing of one day I want to invest in real estate. And I'll be like, do you own a home now? And they're like, yeah, you're a real estate investor.
Period.
Yeah. Take care of it as such. Okay.
So the first step to the process, I think even before getting a pre-approval or talking to a lender or talking to a bank, is getting your finances in order. Mm-hmm. Making sure that you are taking care of your credit, mm-hmm. making sure that you have money in the bank. Mm-hmm. And really determining what a lifestyle change like becoming a homeowner looks like for you.
Career planning. Like making sure you're not about to go from being a butcher to, I don't know.
A butcher? What did you get?
To a gardener. Like if you're hopping industries like that, like that will have an impact because they're going to go back and look at your
2 years of tax history. Returns.
They're going to look at your tax returns. And mm-hmm. so if you went from working at McDonald's last year, and now you might have a good job. Well, maybe that year McDonald's does, you know, impact you getting approved. So it's understanding that in totality and knowing maybe to pause a career move too until after you close on your house. Then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. So the first step would be, you know, of course, budgeting and taking a look at, you know, where you're spending what, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a whole lot of credit card debt, maybe you want to chip away at that first. Mm-hmm. But I always say the first step, you know, when you're ready, when your credit's okay, because the minimum credit score for an FHA loan is 580.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
620 gets you better rates.
Get you better rates, yep.
Yeah, but you don't have to have perfect stellar credit. You just have to have, you know, decent credit mm-hmm. and at least 3.5% of the purchase price of the home. For a down payment.
And your debt to income ratio needs to be properly balanced.
And that debt to income ratio, because a lot of people think, well, I make good money. You know, I make, you know, six figures. I make good money. And none of that matters because your bills are like, your debt to income ratio is like 95%. You're spending every single dime that you make and almost living above your means.
Yeah.
So those things are super important when you're trying to purchase a home. Mm-hmm. It's not just about making the money. It's not just because you can afford it, because your debt to income ratio says something else.
Correct. And all of those are the indicators of what they're going to look at, because you have to also consider that, you know, the average price point of a home, at least in Georgia right now, is in the mid $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking somebody to say, hey, give me almost $500,000. Well, they're going to ask for some stuff for you. They're going to see a trend and a history of your mm-hmm. financial responsibility and what that looks like.
Absolutely. So first things first, make sure, you know, financially, you're prepared, you know, as far as paying off some debt, making sure your credit score is okay. And then the thing that people are so afraid of is to actually engage a lender.
Don't be scared.
Yeah. Like, you know, say you bank with Chase, like possibly, you know, engaging Chase and say, hey, I think I'm ready to buy a home. What does the pre-approval process look mm-hmm. like? And the pre-approval is usually, it might not even take 24 hours to get a pre-approval.
No, that's a fast process. And if you've done the things that we've said in step number one of being on a budget, assessing your career, understanding your finances, having done your tax returns, those mm-hmm. documents that they need are going to be easy for you to access because you've done that initial pre-financial work. It's like, oh, you need a tax return? Boom, I got it. Oh, you need, mm-hmm. you know, W-2s and bank statements? Well, I already know that because I'm looking at it monthly. Here it is. So one thing always informs the next. Which is why, you know, following the proper path is so beneficial. It makes it easier for you.
Yeah, and then your pre-approval, to me, it's kind of like your ticket to start shopping. Because the thing that we do, like we were saying before, with so much technology in front of us, we'll start looking at houses before we even know really how much home not only we can afford, but what a bank is willing to lend. So just because the note might look like a certain thing doesn't necessarily mean that you can afford that house just because, you know, it looks a certain way. So your pre-approval is kind of like that golden ticket to say, hey, I'm pre-approved for $450,000. What can I get? Now I can really start shopping. And then also it equips you with making better offers.
And setting yourself up for success too. I think, some people negate how emotionally and mentally draining the home buying process can become. And so if you are doing all of this, window shopping on Zillow and you're like, I make X, and so I feel like I can afford a $500,000 house, a $600,000 house, and then you get that pre-approval and it tells you it's really $450,000. It's now you're having to walk yourself back, and that fatigue, like, it wears on you when you're not in a bad position still, but sometimes we set ourselves up for disappointment with those expectations when if we were just better informed, we'd be stepping into it with the right mindset.
Absolutely. So your first step, getting that budget together, getting your finances together. Your second step is getting that pre-approval. And getting the pre-approval, and once you engage a lender, sometimes people like to work with credit unions too, because credit unions tend to have a more personal touch, right? You can actually reach out and touch a person and say, hey, this is what I do. I want to buy my first home or buy another home, and this is what I'm looking like at this point. You'll actually be able to talk to a person who can walk you through everything. But the first things first, you have got to get that pre-approval letter. Even engaging professionals like realtors, like we want to work with people who are serious about the home buying process and not just, curious to look and look at
Kicking the
houses,
tires.
kicking the
Kicking the
tires.
tires. Take it for a spin drive. No. It sets you up also to have that good relationship with your realtor too, because you're showing yourself like, hey, I'm prepared, I'm invested, I'm ready to do the work of buying a house, because it's a time investment for your realtor as well. Up until the point that you close, they're working for you for free. So you're showing yourself as a good partner in the process.
Absolutely, and you're serious. So you've got that pre-approval letter in hand, and really that's kind of like the start of the
Kicking you
process.
off. Off
So
to the
you're
races.
off to the races, you're ready to start looking at homes, you find a home that you're interested in, you have a professional realtor that you're working with, somebody whose expertise that you trust, and you're shopping for houses. And then what?
And then you find a home
And you love it.
and you're ready to write an offer. And then there's more work. So I think though that's a good segue, because a question I get a lot is, what do I need when I'm ready to write an offer on a house? And so beyond your pre-approval letter, there is some financial investment as well before you even close on the home. You've got to get the home inspected. That's
There's an earnest money deposit,
there's
so
an
you gotta
earnest
have
money
some
deposit.
cash.
And earnest money is, at least in Georgia, what I'm seeing is 1 to 2% of the purchase price gets held in escrow by the closing attorney. You get it back at closing, but also that money is at risk should you not perform within the agreed, points of the contract. So it's kind of skin in the game for you so that the seller is not taking on all of the risk. But that money gets held in closing with the closing attorney until you close, and it goes towards your closing costs, your down payment, whatever fees that you have. But as long as you're performing like you've agreed to in the contract, that money is safe. But there are protected periods for you as a buyer to exit the agreement. So due diligence is one. So let's say you do pay for that home inspection. Turns out the foundation's bad. There's mold in the attic, whatever the case may be. And you don't want to
And
move
could
forward,
be.
right? And will likely be. There's always an issue. I mean, a home inspection goes through a house with a fine-tooth comb. If it's nail pops, they're going to call it out. But you're going to understand what you're inheriting when you're buying this house. But there are times where it's more work than a buyer's willing to take on. And so if you chose to exit that agreement at that point, your earnest money is protected. It gets returned to you. You move on to fight another day and find another house.
But this is why it's important to work with a professional who has done this before, who can protect you. Because I know we all remember the Wild Wild West time of 2021 when people were putting offers above asking price, no due diligence period.
50K, 100K.
Yeah, over asking price. They're not, really inspecting these homes. So as you navigate this process, you want to work with somebody who can say, hey, we need at least a 5 to 7 day due diligence period where we can go in, we can have the inspector come in, take a look at the house, if there's any repairs we want to negotiate. you want to be able to do that. So you want to make a strong offer. If you're in love with that house and you want to make a strong offer, you present that offer, you get that due diligence period built in. Absolutely. You come with that earnest money, yes, and you have that pre-approval letter attached to your offer, mm-hmm, so that the seller also knows that you're real.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's going to give you leverage, especially if there are multiple offers. The more prepared you are, the faster that you're able to move in a transaction, the more likely are you to be the selected offer to win.
Right. Yeah. And within your contract, your purchase agreement, you also have a financing contingency, because some people are like, well, what if I start the process, mm-hmm, and I get pre-approved, but then I don't get approved for the loan?
Or I lose my job.
Or I lose my job in the process and I decide I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you usually have a financing contingency as well, which says that, you know, you're not obligated to buy this home if you can't get the loan. Mm-hmm.
And then your other protected period as a buyer in a real estate contract is your appraisal contingency, which says maybe you're worried that you're overpaying for a house. Maybe you thought, you know, you wanted to offer 420. Your realtor assessed comps and she's like, no, I think we really need to offer 450. And you're like, well, you're trying to make me overpay for the house. If your appraisal contingency is in play, your lender will order an appraisal. Someone will be dispatched out to give you a valuation on the home. And should it come back below contract price, you can renegotiate. Hopefully the seller is understandable of that. And if not, and you can't come to a meeting of the minds on price, again, an opportunity for you to terminate the agreement and your earnest money is protected.
Yep. So, I mean, you've got to have the skin in the game, but you also have to be realistic about the process. Excuse me, just because you love it or you've fallen in love with it does not necessarily mean it's going to be a smooth, clean transaction. So once you found this house you love, you're working with the realtor, and you guys have put in a great offer, the offer is accepted, and you start the process, you've got to do your inspection with another trusted professional, mm-hmm, that you have to pay for. And home inspections can range anywhere from $300 to $500 to $1,000, depending on what you want inspected and how thorough you want it to be.
Because, mm-hmm, you can have specialty inspections. You can have like the septic tank scoped. If there's a septic tank, make sure you know that, because that is a separate inspection that needs to be done. You might want to have the home inspected for pest. Maybe you want to see if there's termites. In Georgia, you definitely want to have a termite inspection done. Mm-hmm. Radon, which is a naturally emitting gas, comes through the ground, especially an issue in crawl spaces and basements. Maybe that's a test that you want to have done. So as you can see, when you're doing your vetting and understanding a home and inspecting it, mm-hmm, those costs can add up. So have that money in reserve before you start looking. Know that when you find a home that you love, you're going to have it inspected. And should you not move forward, then, you know, that's just the cost of doing business and having the home vetted to be sure that you are comfortable with it. And so you may have to do another inspection on the next house. So just having those numbers in mind and, you know, keeping a reserve for that.
So let's name them. Let's name some numbers. Let's say we got pre-approved for $400,000.
Yeah.
We've put our offer in. What kind of money are we having to come up with? So we got $400,000. We got our earnest money.
So that's $4,000 minimum.
$4,000 earnest money is 1% of the purchase price. Mm-hmm. So that's already what you had to, you know, put into the hat. Mm-hmm. $4,000 out of your pocket, you know, to the closing attorney, whoever's holding the earnest money. Mm-hmm. But of course, at the end of the transaction, that money is applied to your deal. So, mm-hmm, it's not just a wash. It applies to what you're purchasing.
Right.
Then you've got to pay the inspector.
Mm-hmm. Which is $400 to $700 to $1,000, depending on those different inspections that you can do. So let's say it's a 3,000 square foot home on an unfinished basement. Home inspection is going to be $400.
At least.
Your radon inspection is going to be $200. So now you're $600 in. So you're $4,600 in already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And our offer's just accepted and we're still under contract. So I always say, just to be on the safe side, if you're going FHA, which is going to require a 3.5% down payment, mm-hmm, I always say you at least need 10%.
Yeah.
Including closing costs, which is going to be your appraisal fees and prorated taxes.
And to give yourself some buffer for, mm-hmm, like incidentals, things that come up, an extra inspection that you may need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're talking about a $400,000 house, you probably need about almost $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just with FHA 3.5% mm-hmm down. So all the rest of that,
very lenient terms.
Yeah, is a closing cost. Yeah. And then, you know, another thing that we should talk about, and it's not to deter anyone, it's just to be realistic about what the process looks like.
Be educated.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that we have to consider is, let's just say the lowest barrier to entry is an FHA loan.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime you put less than 20% down on a home, you are required to pay PMI, which is private mortgage insurance. So basically, it's an insurance policy that protects the lender, that in case that you default on the loan, they're sure to get their money back, right? So yes, an FHA loan is a lower barrier to entry because you don't need as much money down, but it's going to cost you more in the long run. So you have to pay a private mortgage insurance or PMI until the equity in that home builds up to at least 20% of the purchase price, right? So, you know, there are some added fees for kind of coming in because
for that convenience at the front.
Yeah. Right? Because FHA allows you to have a lower credit score, put down a lower down payment, and you're able to
higher debt to income ratio.
Higher debt to income ratio. So it's kind of like a lot of people's entry. It was my entry point into becoming a real estate investor. So, you know, you just have to think about all of those things.
And that's the thing too. Like, don't ever think information is scary or a deterrent. The sooner that you can start doing all of this work, the better off you are. And I think sometimes why people are intimidated by the home buying process or scared away from it is that they wait until they're absolutely ready to buy. They wait until they found a home that they love to start doing all of this work. And that's when you realize, all these years, my budget wasn't right. All these years, I should have been worried about my debt to income ratio, and I wasn't. And it's like, that's why I think it's important to have these conversations early and often so that you can start preparing now. Like, maybe you are going to rent for the next year or two anyway, but now if you have in mind, I do want to buy a home at the end of that,
what you need to do the next
2 years is going to look very different.
And then another thing that we always hear is about the interest rates, how high interest rates are. But I always say that the real estate market, everything is cyclical. This is the same thing that happened in the 70s and 80s. And the interest rates went as high as 13 and 14 and 15%, you know, but people were still buying homes because once that piece of property is yours, you can always, if the interest rates go down, you can always refinance. You have options, but if you don't even have the property or if interest rates drop, what's going to happen? There are going to be more people in the market buying. So now you got those multiple offer situations where people are walking away crying because they can't win a bid, even though they're qualified and pre-approved and have the money. Writing letters, please let me buy your house. You know, here's a picture of my family. We need somewhere to go. So, you know, you have to weigh things. And, you know, just like Lacey was saying, you become an investor the moment you buy your first home, right? But you've got to think about all those things. Interest rates are a little higher, so there are less people in the market, so there's less competition. You're probably able to get a house for a better price. You actually can get the house that you want. Interest rates start to go down. It's going to be more people and more competition.
And they're going to drive home prices right back up. Because when interest rates are low, people have the liquid money leverage to overpay, to overfinance, because it's not moving the needle much on their mortgage payment. So that is why there was this frenzy. You know, a $600,000 house in like 2021, when it was like crazy and like a frenzy on the market at a 2% interest rate. Sure, I'll pay you
680,
right?
Yeah,
like 700, run it.
Yeah,
it's very different when that same $600,000 house is now a 7.5 interest rate, 8% even. Now you're paying almost $6,000-$7,000 a month. That's a little different. The competition's not going to be as crazy. You're not going to have that financial agility to overpay that way and be like, oh, just finance it, it'll be fine. So that's where the interest rate comes into play. But the thing is, to your point, it can always change, but the price that you pay for the house won't change. You being in a home that you love won't change. So get in the house, get your foot in the door. When interest rates drop, you're not out of the game.
You have options.
Refinance.
So, you know, I am a real big believer that we have to run our households with a little tinge of business too, right? And people are always like, oh, owning a home, there are all these unexpected fees and there's all these negative things about being a homeowner. But I always want people to think about, okay, let's do the difference between owning and renting, right? So if you own the home, you know what that payment is going to be. And even if the taxes increase, whatever happens, you have options. In the city of Atlanta alone, they have homestead exemptions that can lower your taxes by 50%. You have options. If you are renting and the landlord decides to continue to increase the rent, in 20, 30 years, you have just paid rent mm-hmm. and you're at the mercy of your landlord. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have this mortgage, you have pretty much been paying yourself mm-hmm. and building equity in an asset that you have options with. Mm-hmm. It's always about having options. Yeah. And self-made mommies, one of our biggest things is creating generational wealth for our children, mm-hmm. right? And property ownership, you looked up the stat.
I did.
Real estate, run it.
90%, which is like basically all, 90% of millionaires have built their wealth through using real estate as a vehicle to do so. And I think that stat alone is like mic drop. Like, this is what the smart, informed, financially secure, wealth-building minds of the world are doing. They're using real estate because they're not making more land. More people are being born every day. You're going to need a home. Like, it's one of those like staple items that yeah. while it may ebb and flow, it's never going anywhere. And it, quite honestly, like over the lifespan of things, it's probably one of the most stable investments you can make.
Absolutely.
And with getting the highest returns. Yep. Like, I, you know, first house I bought for like 165, was there 2 years, like 2 years to the date on when we closed. And we closed at like 198. Name something else that I could have done for 2 years that I didn't really throw much more money into and walked away with, you know, such a sizable return.
Yep. Yep. And same, you know, like my first home purchase, I bought my first home, oh Lord, over 10 years ago. We'll just leave it at that. Over 10
Shout
years
to
ago,
you though,
right?
10 years ago buying your first property.
Yeah, over 10 years ago. I was 22 years old.
That's amazing.
Buying in Atlanta, and at that time, you could buy a house in Atlanta for less than $100,000, okay? That same house is 10 times that now. So, you know, I know we said we were going to talk about our first home buying experiences. Mm-hmm. That was stressful.
Get into it. Now, come on.
Yeah, like that whole, because once you have that offering, once you have that pre-approval, you found that house, you have that offering, you've put that earnest money down. Now the lender is really going to start underwriting your loan, right?
In your stuff.
Now they're about to dig up in your stuff, right?
That's the other thing too, though. Don't be sensitive during this process.
Hell no.
Like, don't get offended. Like, I just sent y'all this, and you probably gonna send it five more mm-hmm. times before you close.
And they gonna ask you about that $5 transaction.
Don't open any new credit cards.
Please. Run it back.
Do not go get a car.
Please, if you are under contract and your loan is being underwritten, don't make any major purchases.
Don't touch that.
That is the worst thing that you can do, because it's going to change your debt to income mm-hmm. ratio, and you might put yourself in a position to not be able to purchase. Mm-hmm. So if you are under contract, put it on pause. Mm-hmm.
Because quiet as it's kept, a lot of people think that they are protected for stupidity in their financing contingency. No, no, no. You cannot be the cause of why you can't qualify for that loan. And depending on what lender you're working with, they're not going to give you grace in writing a default letter for you. Mm-hmm. So if you go buy a new car and now that is the reason that you can't qualify financially, you're at risk of not getting that default letter and losing that earnest money we were talking
about. That $4,000 is now the seller. So now you have no earnest money, and you have no house, and you have nothing. You just walk away with a clown face.
You have nothing.
Because you went and bought a new car while you were trying to buy a house. Or you went and opened up a new credit card because you were buying a refrigerator and microwave and stove for this new house that you plan on closing on.
The sofa can wait. It can wait.
Mm-hmm. So just don't do anything. Lay low, man. Be cool. Yeah. You got 30 days. Just see it through, yeah. You know?
Yeah. But back to your first buying experience.
Yeah, that first buying experience, it was so stressful because at any moment, I was just waiting on the shoe to drop. Like, sorry, we can't approve you for this loan. And, you know, it was getting down to the last minute. They had me sending documents. The closing got pushed back like 2 or 3 times. And I'm like, God, if it ain't for me, just say that. You know, but it eventually went through, you know. And this was, you know, a house that was less than 100K. And, you know, I could really get into it, but like personal, you know, which is why I am so passionate about insurance and passionate about real estate. You know, it was my father passing and him leaving a little bit of something in life insurance money that allowed me to have that 3.5% on that $95,000 house, you know, in order for me to, you know, really make a real generational wealth building move. Mm-hmm. So for me, It's personal, it's spiritual, you know, insurance and the connection to real estate and investing and how that changes the trajectory of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, life insurance is so important. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that at one point too, but that is a bona fide way to make sure you leave your kids something. Yeah. All you have to do is get some life insurance because, you know, for one, you damn sure gonna die. Ain't nobody immortal. You up out of here.
Nobody gets out alive.
Nobody gets out of here alive. So, you know, take $30 or $40 a month and put it to the side, you know?
And it's a hard conversation to have, but mm-hmm. like, wouldn't you be willing to do hard for your babies? Like, for them to be set up when you're gone? Like, yeah. The least you could do is, like, not have them be grieving you and heartbroken and then also trying to figure out how they're gonna pay the mortgage.
Yep.
Or having to give up your home. Like, why would you create more trauma on top of trauma?
I think people just don't think it through. But, you know, that's one thing I'm grateful for. You know, had it not been for that and my father having that kind of foresight, you know, to leave and it was just a little bit of something, you know, and that little bit of something has changed the trajectory of my life, mm-hmm. of my son's life, mm-hmm. like, seriously. Mm-hmm. So those things are connected, and that's how it worked out for me. You know, I was able to put the down payment on my home. I was able to close on my home, buy me a refrigerator and a stove and a washing machine and a drywall. I bought it with cash. My daddy was like, "Here you go."
Oh, there you go. Okay,
rest in peace.
Well, if you got cash, it don't matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you know, so it was stressful as hell. But that is the best thing I have ever done. So that and going to Howard University and marrying my wife. Those are the best things I've ever done.
You see how nobody asked you about
Howard? H-U, you know?
She can't
help. Had to throw that in there.
She has H-U Tourette's. It's bound to come out again.
It is. It is. Y'all just going to have to tolerate it.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, like, you tapped into home being an appreciating asset. Where did that home lead into value-wise?
Oh,
because you said you bought it for $90,000, which is now a unicorn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's getting there, like half a milli. You know, it's getting there.
Oh, light work, okay.
Yeah, it's getting there. You know, and that's how assets work. Mm-hmm. You know, you purchase, you buy, you hold, and there's a whole science to how you buy, where you buy,
when you buy,
but. At this point, what we want people to do is buy something, get a piece, especially if you're in an area like Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Get a piece of Atlanta before it's, mm-hmm. you won't be able to.
Yeah, before we're like Miami. And I have people ask me all the time. I work with a lot of out-of-state buyers coming from California, New York, Washington. And their question to me is like, where's the smart place to buy? Like, what's the best area to buy in? Because a lot of times they're moving because they work remote. So they don't have to be close to any specific thing. And the truth is, in Atlanta right now, there's no bad purchase. Like, we're expanding and growing at such a rapid rate that even if you can't be in, like, you know, the cool area, the highly desirable area right now, eventually everything's going to spill out and move outward. I mean, I'm getting so much interest in areas like, I don't know, Gwinnett. People are moving to Conyers. And not that those areas are bad, but they were historically mm-hmm. not areas of high interest. But mm-hmm. Atlanta is very high priced to be in those desirable areas. You're looking at $500,000 and up. And so people are moving out. And so, you know, as that growth continues, I don't think there's a bad investment.
Yeah. Just absolutely. Get in. Get you a piece of the A. All right. Or Metro A.
You know, the surrounding greater Atlanta area.
Yeah. But, you know, so once you have that offer, once you are moving through the process, mm-hmm. you're almost there. Don't do anything stupid. Don't mess it up. You know, just be patient.
Because we will talk about you.
Yeah. I mean, just don't do that. You know, you got to think about when you're making these type of moves, think about 20 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, and just think things through. What's really important?
And
you know,
it's worth 21 to 30 days of sacrifice, because that's really what you're looking at. If you go under contract, you get through your due diligence period, most lenders are closing loans within that 21 to 30 day mark.
Yeah.
So
especially right now, because people are so afraid of interest rates, these lenders are hurting for deals.
You can sacrifice 30 days for the rest of your life and being in a good position.
Oh, and another thing, it is okay to work with a broker, a mortgage broker, who can kind of shop around for you for the best rate, for the best deal,
be a little more agile too on mm-hmm. what they can make work and what exceptions you know they can have on mm-hmm. your file.
So really, I think the process sometimes can be like the big boogeyman to people, but it's really not that complicated.
Don't be scared.
Yeah, like, you know, scared money don't make no money, you know? But it's really relatively simple. There are a lot of moving parts, mm-hmm. but it's really pre-approval. Like, nothing moves until you do.
True.
You know, if you talking all of this stuff about wanting to buy a house, go get your pre-approval and see what you can afford.
And stop using the excuse of, well, I don't want it to hit my credit. I don't want to. You've got to make an investment in yourself and take the first step to making an investment in real estate. And that is talking to a lender. Sorry, financial institutions want to look at your credit report. Yeah. They want to see what debt that you have. It is not to be invasive. It's not even to judge you because, I mean, it's a sensitive spot. And I get that. But you've got to get partnered with somebody that you trust, a realtor you trust, and a lender you trust. And then when you're in that circle of trust with them, lay it all out on the table. Say, this is what I'm working with, and let them find a loan product that works for you, because I guarantee you there is one. And if you can't buy today, they can set you up to where you can buy tomorrow.
Yep.
And it's like, stop talking yourself out of the process. Don't use them pulling your credit as an excuse. In fact, when they pull your credit, shop around. Get 3 to 4 other opinions from lenders, compare interest rates, mm-hmm. compare points, compare like what the loan is costing you. Because if you do that mortgage inquiry within at least a minimum of 2 week period, I know for sure, there are some lenders that will tell you you have a bigger window, but 2 weeks for sure, you can shop around and it's going to seem as one mortgage inquiry on your credit.
And really, if you get a good realtor, I know it can be like, well, where do I get that from? But if you get a good realtor, they probably have a good lender that they work with, or at least know.
And listen to them, please.
Yeah.
Like, because it's in their interest to partner you with somebody that can
ensure, get it done.
That assures you close. Like, we want you to have a good experience. We don't want you to go under contract and lose the house because of some surprise thing in your finances on the back end. So know that it's not us steering you because of some type of collusion or secret relationship. It's like, no, I've done transactions with this person. I've seen what they can do. I've seen them pull off the impossible. Yeah. And I trust my clients with them. Yeah. That is what we're getting to when we're trying to get you with our preferred lender. Yeah. It's not for any other reason. It's just that we do so many transactions.
You don't get a kickback or anything like that.
No, we've seen it all. Mm-hmm. And we know that this lender can perform. And if it can happen, then they're the one to make it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just kind of frustrates me. I'm like, man, like, just do it. Just, you know, what's that thing on Instagram? I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna do it. I'm scared. I'm doing it. Just do it. You know, like, rip it off and just get the pre-approval. If it's not the time, if not immediately, then definitely. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, just start the process.
Yeah.
Get that pre-approval. All right, they pre-approved me for this much. Let me go house shopping now. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's fast forward. We're under contract. We've passed the financing contingency, and now it's closing day. Mm-hmm. What happens on closing day?
You gotta pay that money.
Yeah, you do gotta pay that money.
But that's when the moment comes, the fruition of like your hard work. Like, that's the day that you're working for.
And then you can take your IG pictures and post and tell the homies
you,
I'm a homeowner now.
You're a real estate investor now.
You are. That's the day you become a real estate investor.
Mm-hmm. And then make sure you go take care of that home accordingly, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, we have these conversations a lot, and I say we as people in general, where we talk about the home buying process, but we stop our mentoring at closing day.
Yeah.
When I see a lot of people negate that this really is an investment, and when they're ready to sell their home is when they discover all the deferred maintenance items, all the things that they didn't keep up on the home, that they didn't take care of. And now you want top dollar for your investment, right? Because that's why we're all making an investment, to get the best return possible. And you're having to have a tough conversation with an agent on why you can't get $600,000 for this home that you thought you would get because you haven't taken care of it. So when you get that home inspection report, and we're going to bring it back to bring it forward, when you get that home inspection report, even if there is something that you don't get to negotiate for the seller to address, don't throw away that home inspection report. Go take care of it, because now this is your investment.
Yeah. And let's just be honest. You know, we can be honest. Like, being a homeowner, it's not the cheapest thing.
No.
You know, but I always think in terms of the things that I'm doing is adding to my net worth.
Yep.
And every move that I am making is adding to my net worth.
You're feeding that bottom line.
Yeah. And like, if you have dreams of being a millionaire, like, you know, I always say, all right, I'm an asset millionaire. Now I want to be a liquid millionaire. So you have to have a process for how you're going to get there and how you look at those things. And like you're saying, you got to take care of your investments. Yeah. And it is going to require an investment, capital infusion.
Right.
You know, so just being realistic about what it looks like to become a homeowner. Mm-hmm. And there are even things you could talk about with that. Like, I love HOAs. Like, people don't like HOAs. I love it. Yeah. I like it. You know, it can get a little frustrating at times.
It can feel a little intrusive.
But if you've got a good HOA, you know your neighborhood is always going to mm-hmm. look good. You know?
They're also taking care of your investment.
Yep. You're not going to pull up one day and next door is Sanford and Son because that's a violation and they're going to get fined.
Or
you
know, a hot pink house across the street now.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, but, you know, people can attest to that. Like yeah. when you, yeah, there's a price that you pay for living amongst other people. Mm-hmm. So a set rules of covenants and bylaws mm-hmm. is not always a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know too many good things that are beneficial investments for you in the long run that you're not paying into little by little.
Yeah.
And I think we have to shift our perspective because we don't question it with other things that are probably dumb. Like yeah. you don't question that gym membership you pay for and you don't go.
Yeah, I think people just have a hard time being told what to do. People just don't like that. I didn't bought this house. I sacrificed right. my earnest money, my down payment, my money, my, yeah. and my, me.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't realize that it's an investment in the greater good.
Yeah.
You know, you bought into a community because you want your home to retain its value. Mm-hmm. And that is a way that it will happen.
Yeah.
You know, by keeping, you know, certain rules intact and making sure people abide by them.
Taking care of amenities that'll be an attraction for when you go to sell your home.
Yep. And
it matters.
Mm-hmm. It definitely matters. Okay, so I think that kind of almost covers it. Is there anything we missed?
We touched on a lot. I didn't really get to dive into VA loans, and I want to do that because I'm very passionate about it. Obviously, I have a personal space and tie to that as an Air Force veteran. So when I bought my first property, it was with a VA loan, mm-hmm. and I put no money down. And
$0?
$0, no money out of my pocket, kept it in the bank. And I think so often that kind of gets negated and it doesn't get a large spotlight. I hear people talk about loans all the time and very seldomly do I hear them mention VA loans. And I think if you are a veteran, if you are a mm-hmm. military service member, this is something that you are entitled to use and you should look into it and definitely utilize it. Leverage it. Get your foot in the door. Don't use waiting till I get back home or I'm in a certain state and waiting to buy. Like buy in the state that you're in. Make an investment now because when you sell, you can use that VA loan again. You can put zero money down again for the life, mm-hmm. you know, of your real estate transactions. And sometimes you can even like split your entitlement. So if you don't use enough of it, you can use what's left over to buy something else. So there's a lot of caveats to it. And it's definitely a great tool to utilize. I bought my first home, like I said, with a VA loan. The home was listed for $175. It appraised for $165. In a VA loan contract, you have it built in that the home must appraise for what you're under contract for, or you as a buyer retain the right to negotiate on price. So we negotiated on price. Mm-hmm. Luckily for us, the seller was amiable, agreed to drop the purchase price to $165, and I closed at $165 with no money down.
Try finding a house now for $165, okay? Good luck with that.
It's impossible. It's impossible. And it's amazing. That same home now, because of course I watch it because I'm low key mm-hmm. a real estate nerd like that, because I just like to see yeah. like the trajectory of appreciation. Right now it's probably valued at like 320, yeah. 340, 350 easily. And just a, what, 4 year span? Like mm-hmm. that's amazing.
That's real estate how real estate works.
I like it.
Yep.
I like it here.
And one last thing we need to touch on. As an insurance agency owner, insurance is another part of your mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. So your homeowner's insurance policy, these are some things that you need to look for. Don't always look for the cheapest price when it comes to your homeowner's insurance policy. You want to make sure that you have the proper coverages and you also want to check your deductibles. So one of the biggest claims people have is a wind and hail deductible claim, right? So that's if a hailstorm comes or anything happens and it blows half your roof off. You got to make sure that those deductibles are something that you can afford because the deductible is what you are responsible for before insurance pays anything. So yeah, you got a quote for $900 a month for homeowners insurance, but your deductibles are $15,000. Mm-hmm. So that means if anything happens, you've got to come up with $15,000 before insurance pays anything.
At your account.
So you want to make sure that you work with an insurance professional who's going to look out for your best interest, right? And you also have to think about other things. If you're buying a house that has like big oak trees in front of it, right? Those oak trees roots might just grow into your plumbing one day. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you have coverage for your main plumbing lines in your yard. You want to make sure that you have coverage for whatever that thing is that makes that house special or different. So you've got a she shed in the back and you got something that just sold you on that house. You want to make sure that you have that covered, because it's not only about acquiring the assets, it's about protecting your assets mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where so many people get intimidated by the home buying process, right? And I think it's because when you become a homeowner and you become an investor, you're also taking on accountability. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to run from accountability. It's scary, it's a burden, it's a weight, you've got to be responsible. But the win that you're going to receive on the back end is so worth it. It's so worth being accountable, being responsible. Like, if you want to make money, if you want to be a millionaire and build generational wealth and be a legacy shifter for your family, you're going to have to get uncomfortable, do things you don't want to do, put on your big girl pants, your big boy pants, and like lean in, like get knowledge. And I think that's what we are hoping to achieve. And even in these exchanges, mm-hmm. And there's so much more we'll talk about later, but like, just get the knowledge, be informed, know what to do, not only go acquire the assets, but also protect your assets and understand what that means and what you can leverage in doing all of this. And so just stop having an excuse.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, like, I'm one of those like shoot from the hip type of people. When I make up my mind about doing something, you got to put some action behind that. You can't just sit around and say, oh, I want to do this. I want to one day become a homeowner. Yeah. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get that pre-approval. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Let's just see. Mm-hmm. Let's just be curious. Mm-hmm. So if there's anybody that's watching and thinking about becoming a homeowner, mm-hmm. let's make it real. What? I dare you to hit your bank and get a pre-approval letter. Or just start and try. And see what you might be pre-approved for.
Calling them out. If you scared, just say that.
Scared money don't make no money, boo.
If you scared, just say that. No, you got to get out there. I love it.
Yep. So I challenge you. Go get that pre-approval letter.
Ball's in your court. Either you're going to sit at the table with the legacy builders and the wealth, generational wealth, or you're going to be talking about what you could have done, should have done, when that same house that you're afraid to buy now at $350,000 is $550,000, and you're like, I should have bought. We know.
Yeah, we know.
We know.
We know. Game. Get you a piece.
Yeah, and we got you then too, but we still might say, I told you so.
Yep. I think that's everything for now.
I love it.
Until next time.
More to come.
More to come.
Self-made mommies.
Self-made mommies.
We out.
We out.